Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. Good morning. Yeah, this is Tech Talk. Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM, Raleigh Heights, Illinois. Michael Kassler, your host today, and we are going to have a good day. I'm going to talk a little tech, a little news. I'm going to go back. I'm going to take us back in time a little bit. I'm going to go back to like kind of the original way we used to run the show. I'm going to do a little more talking about some very practical technology tasks and things that you can do before we bring, of course, our good friend, Mr. Jay Garman on, who's going to be on talking geek trivia. Catch us up on last week's question, maybe do a little bit more. I don't know that I'll be able to hold him on the line for very long. I know he's out and about today. This is the time of year, of course, when things start to get just a little crazy. We start to get a little more going on, a few more things happening around the Halloween. And then we're coming into, man, we're not that far away from Thanksgiving and all that. But I got one thing, though, I do have to say before I jump into all this technology conversation and so on, and that is go Cubs. Man, what a great – well, I won't say it was a great game. It was a very interesting game. It was a good game. Of course, they're trying for the best out of five here against the Giants, and they took down that first game. So two more to go. That's all it is. It's always good to get that first one under the belt, though. So shouts out Cubbies and Cubby fans. I know you just heard a lot about that on the sports show, but that's all right. I gotta throw in my two cents on that as well. So we'll hope for continued good stuff going on with that. So, you know, like I said, a lot of stuff going on in tech, as always happening, things like this. Just to kind of tie the knot up on some things that we've talked about in the past, Samsung's Galaxy Note, you keep hearing about it. It has become such a thing now. I was off, we missed a show here because we were out in Vegas, my wife and I, celebrating our anniversary and hanging out with some great friends and family and just having a blast. And the interesting thing was, as we're loading onto the flight, and this was a United flight going from Chicago O'Hare out to Las Vegas, Nevada, McCarran Airport. We were informed and told, if you have a Samsung Galaxy Note 7, everyone, please turn it off and store it somewhere where it will not cause damage if it explodes. They literally told us this as we were getting on the plane, both in O'Hare and also too in Las Vegas. And it's a little bit of overkill, but you know, hey, whatever. They have recalled, of course, all of those Note 7s, and now the major carriers are also saying they're going to drop out as well. Bloomberg reports that AT&T is considering dropping the Galaxy Note 7 entirely. I think it'd probably be a good point, a good time at this point for Samsung just to stop production and say, yeah, that's probably about enough. Enough with the 7. We're done with the 7. It's time to move on, right? Just get rid of that thing before it burns a hole in your pocket or something. Now on phone news, though, always good to keep up on some of this. I'm going to have to give a phone call. Speaking of phones, I'm going to have to give a phone call to our good friends at Verizon. Verizon has been a great supporter of the show in the past, and he has kept us in the loop with some good technology and things. Well, right now. Verizon is considered one of the first and only companies that's going to be providing Google's new Pixel phone. The Pixel phone is actually, you know, completely owned by them, made by them, and then produced and so on. Now, interestingly, there has been some backlash against the Verizon, only on Verizon tag that comes when you see the ads for Google's new phone for the Pixel, because the reality is, of course, that although Verizon is the only one that's actually selling it for their service, the Google Pixel you can get from many different sources and is what they call jailbroken. It's open. It's not tied down to a carrier. You can actually take it to anywhere you want to. Verizon's the one, though, that's got their hands in that pie and is going to make that happen. So like I said, I'm going to have to bug our Verizon friends and see if maybe they can drop me one of those Google Pixel phones and take it out for a spin and see how it is. Now, the other thing that Verizon is doing, though, which is also very, very, very cool, is they are getting involved in the drone business. Indeed. We don't need cell towers. That's what they're saying. Yeah, we don't need towers. I don't need to hide those things. I don't need to worry about how to get my 4G LTE coverage spread out even further than it is. Oh, no. We're going to do airborne LTE operations, or ALO. And that's basically they're outfitting drones with a bunch of 4G radios and letting those fly all over the place. Now, Facebook had looked into this, of course, a little while ago as a potential way to provide internet connectivity to people who would not have it in those rural areas. But Verizon's plans are just a little more focused. They're going to be using its drones just to provide emergency LTE connectivity when those cell towers are not an option. So if you remember, 2 years ago, I believe, and we had some people from Verizon on to discuss this, there was a large tornado down in southern Illinois. Verizon jumped into the fray, went down there, and they had to drive a bunch of trucks down to erect temporary cell towers that provided communication services and other types of emergency services to individuals that were afflicted by that devastating storm. This is a way they can provide some of those same services without the need of the trucks, without the need of so many individuals coming down there. They can actually just kind of throw these things up into the air, pass out phones that will work with them if people don't have it, and get those things running. Now, interestingly, of course, Verizon, although they're getting a lot of press on this, they are not the only company working on this. AT&T has almost the same exact project that they're doing. They're working with Qualcomm to see how the drones could be used safely with their 4G network and have started their trials back in September. You got to look at a lot of things when this is happening. Coverage, signal strength, all this. Make sure that your connectivity is consistent. Also, too, that as drones move, as they are wont to do, that you're not losing signal over and over again. So that will be interesting to see how they how that works and whether it does work. Like I said, I'm hoping maybe we'll get some people on here and we can talk about that and also to check out that new Google Pixel phone. And I'm sure we'll be reporting on that more as time goes along and we learn more about it. One last thing on Google, and then I'm gonna break bad on Apple just a little bit here. But first, I'm gonna more good stuff about Google. Google's just doing lots of good stuff lately, I guess. You know, if you listen to the show, if you pay attention here, you know what a big fan I am of fonts. I'm a font fan, a font fanatic almost, a fan fontatic. I don't know. I need Dave here to balance that out and let me know when I'm when I'm being crazy. Google, though, has a new font. This is a great font. This is a wonderful thing. It's called Noto, N-O-T-O. It's open source. That means it's free. You can get it yourself if you want to, if you like it for one reason or another. But they didn't design it necessarily just because of wanting to create an aesthetically more attractive font, but because they wanted to create a font that could be used to share information and to cross language barriers. One of the things you run into if you're doing web design or if you're working with applications or mobile apps that are going to cross barriers between different countries is the fonts that you select can be very impactful as to what countries are able to use the apps or websites that you create. You may be familiar, of course, with obviously different characters in different languages. You know, if you're, you got an app in Russia, you've got to have some Cyrillic characters. Even if you're going nowhere more far than Germany, say, you've got to have those umlauts and other things, or Mexico, and you need your enyes. These are the types of things that make it very difficult for app developers and website developers to make apps and sites that are universal and universally accessible. There's a lot of ways to manage it and deal with it, and you can create code that'll swap the fonts out when you're in different regions or different localities and things like this. WordPress, for example, has a whole archetype set up in order to allow that to occur easily. Google has created, however, a single font that has over 110,000 characters, which means that it spans more than 800 languages. It doesn't matter if you're trying to read it in Farsi, or if you're in English, or if it's German or Hindi, or what, it doesn't matter, Chinese, whatever. All the characters are there. You can use them. You can convert them every else. It covers every single symbol in Unicode standard today, every single one. This took 5 years for them to complete. They had experts from Adobe, experts from Monotype, all over trying to make this thing a reality. And an interesting stuff. Here's the kicker to this, though. I love this part of the story. This may be something we'll hear in a few years. You might want to write this down, because you'll hear this from Jay maybe in a couple of years if Nodo becomes popular. Where does the phrase Nodo come from? It comes from the phrase "no more tofu," which refers to ridding the web of blank or garbage characters, which are displayed when the symbol from the language that you're trying to write or read into is not available on the user system in the font that you've selected. That's referred to as tofu. Now, it is not a small package. If you get the whole font comes in at nearly half of a gig, 472 meg to be precise. And that's because it includes traditional Chinese, simplified Chinese, all the Korean characters, et cetera, et cetera. If you are more intentional about the languages you're going to go to, you don't have to pick up every single one. And the individual ones, of course, are rather small. Once you get into the pictographic languages, they get a little bigger. But anyway, so look for Nodo. If you're writing apps and things, this might be a thing that will help you out. If you are writing apps and creating apps and doing programming and development, though, you might be a little irritated with Apple right now. I told you I was going to break bad on Apple. Sure enough, they're back in the news for doing goofy stuff on their webpage. If you do develop, you probably have run across, or you might even be a user of, I know I am, I'm a user of Dash. There's an app called Dash. It's for Macs. It's on iOS. You can get it on your iPad. You can get it for your Mac server, Mac desktop, whatever you want to. It's been around for a long time, and it's incredibly, incredibly useful. What it allows you to do is look up and also to save, so you can research, but you can also save code snippets. A snippet is just a little collection of script or code that will be useful to you. And either it's something that, you know, and what I've used it for is I'll create a block of code and then I'll save it. It's my own piece and my own writing of code, but I'll save it because I'm going to reuse it several different places. If I'm accessing the same API, why do I have to rewrite that API interface every single time? It's ridiculous. No, of course not. You copy and save that. There's a lot of ways to do that. I use Evernote too. Dash is nice though, because Dash also connects to external resources. So if there's not code that I've written already, I can go and look for it very easily, grab it on there. You can look for the app called Dash, but you won't find it right now because Apple sent out a notice of termination. Now, the original story that I read about it, there was no explanation. That has been updated now. So initially they said the account was terminated. And this is the thing too, is that the developer of Dash, I'm looking for his name right now. I can't recall exactly. Oh yes, Bogdan Popescu. His app, when it was denied, basically just received a notice of termination. So his account was canceled. His account was terminated. And it just said due to fraudulent conduct. And, Bogdan called them. He emailed them. He said, what are you talking about? And they said they can't provide any more information until finally, just a little while ago, we do have an update on this, is that Apple contacted Mr. Popescu, and they said that they had found evidence of App Store review manipulation, which is something, of course, that Mr. Popescu says he's never, ever done and would not do and doesn't even know how to do it. However, Apple has said this is their final decision. There's no appeal for it. And it's done. He's debating right now what to do with it. Now Dash is not only a popular tool, it does have a paid version, which gives some functionality which is not available there. So this is really going to cause problems for him as far as his monetization of the app goes. His only option is going to be to try and do it through his own website and develop it that way. It's going to be very, very difficult. He's actually already saying he may open source the code and may make it possible for people to get it either on GitHub or other sites for free. So you'll be able to find it. You can go find the app if you do search for it and look for that. I'll try to remember to put an link up on the website or via one of our social media feeds so that you can access that. And, so there's a blog, OS News. This kind of sums up a lot of how I feel about Apple and why this is difficult. It's really troublesome, is that there's a lot of arrogance with the App Store and with the way that they run things. Tom Holwerda, who runs the tech blog OS News, wrote, Dash is a popular tool among Apple developers. It seems incredibly unlikely that its developer would even need to resort to manipulating the App Store reviews. All of this, again, sadly illustrates what I and OS News have been saying for years. Building your business atop Apple's iOS or Mac App Store is a terrible business decision because you're completely inflated Apple's whim. We'll see if this has any long-term effect on Apple. It certainly will have a long-term effect on Dash, sadly. My two cents on it is go get the Dash app anyways. And I'm hoping that perhaps Mr. Popescu will take, if he gets any donations, he'll take some of that money and use it to, sue Apple or do something interesting to kind of make a difference with that. I think would be a good thing. I'm going to do one last bit of news. There's a lot of people I know that listen to the show use BitTorrent and MicroTorrent and other torrent tools and share and spread files using torrents. Torrents are little packages and ways of providing information to your computer that lets it know where you can get a file that you want, even if it's spread out among many, many, many machines, not centrally hosted on a single server. It's a little bit of a different idea. It's called peer-to-peer file transfer and sharing. So BitTorrent's one of the bigger names that has been out there, and they've been around for a very, very long time. They, about 6 months ago, came out with BitTorrent Now, embracing the idea that the reason people are using BitTorrent primarily is to download and watch or listen to movies and music respectively. They created something called BitTorrent Now, and that allows you to literally just click on the torrent link, and after a little bit of time, it will start playing that movie or playing that music without you having to wait for the complete download. Interestingly, though, that is failed. BitTorrent founder Bram Cohen in Variety said, we're done with this. And they fired all the co-CEOs, which included Jeremy Johnson, Robert Delamar, CFO Deepak Joshi is moving into the role once occupied by them, and they're shutting down BitTorrent Now. BitTorrent itself is probably not in too much danger out of being lost, but supposedly the reason why this is being shut down is not even necessarily that it wasn't a viable concept or idea. It's that the co-CEOs, I'm calling them out here, is Jeremy Johnson and Robert Delamar. The co-CEOs were, this is a quote from Variety, the Variety article. It says the spending on BitTorrent now was out of control. Millions of dollars poured into it, and it's just not giving any ROI. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if that comes back, if they get a little bit of a better leadership in place for it. I'm a little doubtful that it'll come from BitTorrent, but I guess we shall see. We shall see. So I said too that I was going to go a little old school, but before I do talk about some of the tech things I've accomplished here and wanted to share with you the things that you can do, I am going to try to give our good friend Jay Garman a quick call here. Now, as I said, he's kind of out and about this morning, so might be difficult to get hold of him, but we'll give it a shot. We'll give it a try and see what we can do. We got phones ringing and everything. See, this is not so bad. Perhaps not.
Hello.
Oh, I was just saying, huh? I don't know if we're gonna get him today, but there you are. So, welcome. Glad to hear your voice.
Well, that's unusual for most human beings, but I'm glad it's true for you.
there's always a warm mic here for you, Jay. You never have to worry about that. We're always happy to hear your voice, because otherwise people just have to listen to me, and that's trust me, it's much worse that way for anyone you ask. Are you enjoying your morning though? It's a cool one. Perfect for that cross country race though. I know you're out busy cheering on family for the annual races here.
Yes, in fact, I apologize for the screaming and starter pistols you may hear in the background. it is in fact a perfect day for racing. It is 65 and clear with a 10-mile-an-hour breeze.
Oh, wow.
Our coach informed us. So in the sun, it's perfect. In the shade, it's just a little chilly. So it is exactly how you want to fall across country meet to go.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Well, the unfortunate part of that, I used to hate that, though, because then there was no excuses. I couldn't claim that, oh, it was too hot for me, or then I'd have to lean on the equipment failure somehow. Shoelace became untied, or whatever. no, screaming and gunshots. It's like a Trump rally. Everything's fine.
Well, or you are from Chicago, you should be used to this.
Yes. Exactly. This is my weekly evening news report too. Lots of screaming and gunshots. So, it has, sadly, it's become difficult I just don't do local news that much anymore, because it's pretty much an unending stream of so-and-so killed, murdered, raped, robbed, dead, death, pain, and there's only so much I can do. Interestingly, of course, and I keep turning the show political, but I don't mean to. I was going to bring up, and it was interesting in light of the recent revelations. I don't know if they're revelatory, but the recent exposure of a recording of Trump's exposing yet again his character and feelings towards women. I find it interesting that people are surprised by that. One of the things I was going to talk about on air, and I'll let you get back to your game before I get into this too much. We have a unique opportunity with technology these days to be able to really have an historic record that has a veracity to it that has never been achievable before. And I've thrown my two coins in the fountain on that. With I created a Twitter bot that takes Donald Trump's tweets, actual real live tweets, but from past years. It's kind of a this day in history, but I've called it this day in Trump, and retweets the tweets that he had from years past, just to kind of make sure that people don't forget how we got here, I guess. or where we came from. And it was a fun exercise, honestly. It was just a fun exercise to do to prove that it could be done, and then to see if there was any traction on it from Twitter. And there's been a little bit. I'll talk about more in depth about that later, though.
Well, there's an interesting sociology to that, or psychology, or the intersection too. That for about 15 years, we've sort of gotten to the point where, and the Daily Show lived on this. This is the entire Jon Stewart era of politician says X, go to the video vault and find where they've said anti-X, and then hold them to account, and then watch their surrogates try and square that circle of, well, at that point, that was different than this point, when it's clearly not. And going on, you know, the greater part of a generation of that having been sort of the nature of this, that technology has a history, like there is no memory hole. The political class's response has been to say, it doesn't matter what we said. It only matters what you feel about us. Mm-hmm. And so it entirely became a non-logical response. You should vote for someone because of how they make you feel, not the rational positioning of the issues. And that was always true for some slice of the electorate, you know, the people you could reason with and the people you could just appeal to. But they've sort of abandoned the reasoning, both sides, entirely. Because no one wants to be held accountable for their past record.
Yep.
So it had to become entirely about how you felt. And sort of the Trump candidacy, whether you like it or not, is the ultimate expression. It's the watershed moment of that. He literally joked about, I could shoot someone and it wouldn't matter.
Yep.
And it's probably true. Because he has become the sort of avatar of dissatisfaction for a certain slice of the electorate, which he shies away from. And the particulars of what he says doesn't matter.
Yes.
At all.
Yes. Well, and that is what I find interesting, is kind of the hoops people will jump through, the rationalizations that they'll make, playing both sides of that. You know, on the one hand, with, you know, comments like have been recently revealed with his recordings, saying like you're saying, you know, like, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, and that's just boys talk or whatever. But then also too, taking the things that he actually has said and saying, this doesn't agree with what you think, what you personally believe, if you're, you know, but also too, it doesn't even agree with what he has said in the past. And the response that I've gotten from people that support Trump is, oh, he's just saying that to get elected. That's okay. And it's like, but the whole foundation of your belief in him supposedly is that he's saying it like it is, and he doesn't play that game. But you're eager to just jump around. The whole process, this cycle, and I'm picking on Trump, but really I could say so many of the same things about the Clinton side. It's just easier and more fun to pick on Donald. But I could say the same about either side, is that it really has been what you say. It's just, it has come down to the core of, I don't care about the issues. I'm just voting for this guy/gal because it makes me feel good. It hits something that I need to do. And
right.
And that's too bad. That's too bad.
Well, and it's interesting. There's a lot of reasons why Hillary is not popular. But one of the main reasons she's not popular is because she is incapable of playing that game, where she will say, I voted for the Iraq War at time because I thought it was right. I have gotten more information and I have changed my mind, and here's the rational reasons I have changed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, and she does it on a number of issues where she just lays out this Vulcan like sort of, here I got from A to Z and here's all the points in between and here's how I did it. And the response is, well, I don't like the fact that you could change positions because of facts, and that makes me feel like I can't trust you.
Yeah, yeah, that was exactly what I was going to mention. And when she does do that, when she actually does take the time to do that, or there are those reasons, you know. And although I'm certainly not, you know, I'm not voting Republican or Democrat this cycle, probably. it makes me like her more, because I've always felt that there's sort of an imbalance in our, how we expect our politicians to act, in that you would want them, you can't call that hypocrisy when someone, as you say, when someone changes their views based upon new facts. That's not hypocrisy. That's intelligence. That's like something you would want someone to actually do. The people that don't do that are insane. So,
well, it goes back to Nassim bin Taleb, who wrote The Black Swan, which was about unpredictable events that were not preceded by facts. In those situations, you need to have an assessment of the person's character, because you clearly cannot predict how, if you're referring to something that has no precedent, you basically default to character. But also, his point in that book was the example of the black swan. Until Europeans settled in Australia, no one had ever seen a black swan. It literally did not exist. All swans were white. So the definition of a black swan event is you discover something you thought did not exist or was impossible. And so if you continue after seeing a black swan to insist all swans are white, that is not smart. You have to incorporate new facts into your paradigm.
Yes.
But that is not sort of, and I'm actually going to try and bring this back to tech. So Bruce Schneier, who's the security researcher who writes really interesting books on security technology, talks about why security is so hard. It's because, and it all comes down to three words: trust doesn't scale.
I'm sorry, what was it? It was trust. Trust doesn't. I heard trust doesn't, and then I didn't hear the third word.
Scale. It does not scale. You cannot work at large sizes. So, in a lot of systems, work for small groups that will not work for large groups. Because in small groups, you can individually assess all the variables about all the members.
Mm-hmm.
I can trust you for this. I cannot trust you for that. And when you start getting, and sort of Dunbar's number plays into this a little bit, the notion that you only have social ties up to certain sizes of groups of certain levels. And Dunbar's number is actually Dunbar's numbers. He talks about the group sizes at which point there's a reduction in fealty and fidelity amongst the social bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And they incidentally map out very well to both hunter-gatherer tribe sizes and military units. So there's a level at squad, there's a level at platoon, there's a level at company, there's a level at brigade, at battalion, so on and so forth, where the bonds sort of reduce. And it's sort of natural to our primate hierarchy.
Well,
all of which is to say, when you're designing a complex system that involves people, you have to institute rules to supplant the fact that you cannot innately trust.
Mm-hmm.
There is a rule that you drive on the right side of a road, because you cannot trust a stranger who does not know the rules. You cannot assess in the oncoming traffic moment whether they're going to swerve or not.
Mm-hmm.
You have to operate on trust. They know the rule. It's about this everything that, if your power is going to come in at 110 or 220, like there's rules you have to put in place. And that sort of, we're seeing socially, this issue of, at least in the political arena, we don't like rules. We still want to go on that gut sort of trust. We want to have that illusion of a small, intimate relationship with the candidate that they have with 300 million Americans.
Yes.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
We have to treat this as sort of a rational application of rule, and no one likes that.
Yep. Yeah. No. That is exactly. I think part of the issue and the cognitive dissonance that you see right now with both parties is that when you force them to apply or ask them to apply the same rule set, whether it be ethics or morals or action, to your own candidate as you were applying to any other candidate, then you start to see how that breaks down and realize that you're not applying the same rules to the various candidates. On the same lines with that, the size of unit that you can trust. I've seen that I've seen that listed. I've seen that identified from a sociological standpoint, as far as it becomes with the definition of family or a local group versus the definition of other. And yeah, outside of a certain number of people, you automatically start identifying people outside of that as other, and there's only so many you can include in there, and you hit it right on the nose. It's exactly what's happening now, is that we've got candidates, and because of our social networks that have encompassed more people, and because of the ability to see and hear these individuals sometimes more frequently than we see or hear or speak to our actual real local family, it causes a disruption in our evolved ability to identify self, family, and other, and to understand how to apply those rules among them. Hopefully things like having the technology to bring to be able to identify that, hey, this is where the true character is. We can't just evaluate based on the last month of statements, but you have to evaluate on their actions for their career and their history. Hopefully that'll become something valuable, as opposed to just punitive, I guess, to individuals that have the desire to change their views or change their beliefs. And we can get to a point where we're making rational decisions, but this is humanity we're talking about, so I don't know.
Right. Yeah, that's and it's also not in the political class's interest to make these about rational choices, because it's much easier to manipulate emotions than it is to manipulate a fact. It's just easier. I can make you feel like you can trust me much easier if it's entirely based on emotion than based on a strict, rigorous examination of my past record.
Yes. Yeah. I saw one of my most, my favorite classes when I was getting my MBA, and we did a lot of white paper studies, and my favorite quote from anywhere in there, we were doing a study on car sales, and specifically used car sales, but also new car sales. And one of the owners of a large group of these new car sales stores was bemoaning the start of the internet, and he said, and I love this quote, he said, "I don't know what we're going to do when the last uninformed customer walks out the door." Because the access to information about what you should really pay for something was becoming so prevalent that all of the sales techniques and capabilities that they had to manipulate that were disappearing. And I keep hoping and crossing my fingers the same thing's going to happen in politics, but have yet to see it happen. And of course, there's still a lot of car salesmen doing great business, building off of people's disinterest.
Not too as many. There are fewer of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play the part of Dave now. I'm going to jump us to geek trivia because my little girl's race is about to start.
So oh, yes, please
I'm going to be. Keeping us on politics, the question was, what was the first major U.S. election where computer-tabulated voting occurred? The presidential primary in Georgia, in two counties, in 1964. In Fulton County and DeKalb County, basically Atlanta, two counties did punch-card, paper check, automatic voting in 1964. And the reason I could not track down, it's not in the records, but the National Institute of Science and Technology actually did a long report on this on the history of voting. And talking about taking computer voting national. The reason so it took so long to get there, despite the fact that we had computer tabulation since the 50s, is there weren't enough computers around that could be leased at a price that local election commissions could afford them. I'm fairly certain but cannot prove they leased the computer at Georgia Tech for this. But there are at least a dozen or so available mainframes in Georgia in 1964. They could have leased for this. They could have done punch card tabulation. And it proved successful enough that in the presidential election that same year, not only did Fulton and DeKalb County in Georgia do it for the presidential election, but Eugene, Oregon, where the University of Oregon was, also did it. And San Joaquin and Monterey counties in California did it, which are not that far down. They're in the middle of, there's UC Santa Cruz, I think, is near there. So they probably use a computer in that area. Also, it's not that far from Silicon Valley. So there were computers to be had in California. And from there, it started to creep out. But what's interesting to me is the Vote-O-Matic, where you had a booklet with a punch card in the back. And as you turn the page, the paper had different slips in it to expose different rows in the punch card, was exactly the same system used in Florida in 2000 for the contested Bush 4 election with the hanging chads. It was literally 35 years later, still the same technology as they were using in the 60s in Georgia.
Wow. Well, you know, I would say why, I kind of know the answer. It's sort of the same reason why it takes so long for new surgical devices to become prevalent is, you know, it works. It's difficult to mess with. And, you know, why change it? Of course, we found out why you should change that in that 2000 election also. But wow, interesting. So 64, later than I would have suspected, although not terribly late, just because of knowing that, how far behind. And of course, recently we've had reports of these voting booths, now the newer voting booths, being hacked, or at least attempted to be hacked in several of the states.
Which was my next segue. If you go and pull up this NIST report from the early 70s looking back, the number one thing was there was an issue with operational security with these techniques. Okay. They should have the same operational overhead as financial transactions in the banking or investment sectors. Mm-hmm. And they do not presently possess such security, and it should be applied going forward. I don't know that we've ever done that. I don't think that we've ever said, you know what, voting should be just as secure as the stock exchange. I don't think we've got that. We said that voting at the local municipal level should be just as rigorously audited as investment banking. Like, that's not happened still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, but there's this constant struggle in America, though, between, economies of scale and better methodologies that come from top down versus the desire for freedom and autonomous action at a local level. And it messes some things up and messes them up badly. We see this. I'm on the school board, and I'll say it. We see that as a problem in our school districts. We see it as a problem in things like this. But the alternatives of moving to, like, say, our U.S. Postal Service, does a good job of managing over the entire country. But you would not necessarily want to apply that same bureaucracy and application to, local politics, to maybe not to voting. I don't know. Boy, this is a great cycle for all sorts of discussions. Well, I know you've got to run, though, so I will not bury you with more thought on that. What should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, Hurricane Matthew just brushed by but didn't completely wreck Florida, but now it's got the East Coast in its sights, and we're not sure exactly what it's going to do. If it actually turns out being pretty rough storm, the name Matthew will likely be retired because, you know, it's going to be associated with a specific landfall event. If Matthew turns out to not be that bad, his name could be recycled. Hmm. So the question is, if Matthew or any other named storm this year turns out to not get retired, how soon could we see that name recycled? Or another way, what is the recycling policy for hurricane names?
Interesting. Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. And we've certainly seen quite a few of these major storm names over the last couple of years. So yeah, how long until the next one? And I know Katrina got retired, so we'll never have another Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh no, that's a fantastic question. All right. Well, Jay, I understand you. You got to get back to your race. Good luck to your family and your daughter. It sounds like a beautiful, wonderful, amazing day for it. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk next week as well.
All right. Take care, sir.
Awesome. Have a good one. Thanks, Jay. Jay Geek Trivia Garmin, jgarmin.net. You can get more Jay there anytime you want. I think he's keeping it up to date somewhat reasonably. Yeah, great stuff, man. And, you know, Hurricane Matthew, boy, I hope it doesn't hit hard enough that we have to retire that name as well. I was pleased to see. I've got a number of friends who actually got to Florida this last week, and hopefully they don't experience the issues that Haiti did and other places in that region of the world as that hurricane came through. I guess we'll find out. I am going to do a quick set of IDs and legal info before I come back in to wrap up the show. Don't go away though. You are listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LP FM, and we will be right back at you right after this.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
Have you ever had a day when you want to listen to the Beatles, then the Spice Girls, then Garth Brooks, or maybe even a little Wham? Well, now you can. I'm Tony Young, and every Monday afternoon on 98.3 WRLR from 3 to 5, I take you through an eclectic mixture of music. That's why I call my show The Mix. I like to mix it up, and sometimes I get a little bit mixed up. But whether it's Holst or Hoobastein, it's always a good time. Just remember, anything goes on The Mix.
Since Comcast came into the Lake McHenry County area as the primary source for cable TV, they've shown themselves to be one of the most community-minded companies around. They've graciously provided our studio facilities with cable TV services so we may monitor national news and CHSI high-speed internet service so we may stream our broadcast signal via the web to increase our coverage area to include a global audience. For more information on basic cable, digital cable, or high-speed internet cable services, their website is www.comcast.com.
Prep football is back once again right here on WRLR 98.3 FM. It's another season brought to you by the law firm of O'Keefe, Lewis, and Bruno PC. Our next game will be a battle in the North Suburban Conference. The Patriots of Stevenson will make a visit with the Bears in Lake Zurich. WRLR 98.3 FM and WRLR.FM will have all the coverage beginning with a pregame show at 7 p.m., followed by the kickoff around 7:30 p.m. Listen all season long to the best high school football in Lake County right here on WRLR 98.3 FM.
Do you have records, CDs, cassettes, or 8-tracks that are taking up valuable space in your house? You can help WRLR in its mission of bringing the power of radio to your community by donating your record collection to WRLR. Donate those records to us, and we will turn them into a tax deduction for you and a source of funds for us. WRLR is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. To contribute to WRLR, please call us at 847-380-9957 or email us at studio@WRLR.FM. We will be taking donations at our studios at 629 Pontiac Court in Round Lake Heights, Illinois, right next to the police station. You can also drop off donations on Monday and Friday mornings from 8 a.m. to 12 noon. Check our Facebook page for additional donation times.
Bombastic, donne-moi ton bomb. All right, we're back. We're back. Thank you for listening to that. We love our sponsors. So shouts out to everyone there. Hey, you know what? I gotta read a quick notice for you as well. As we're getting close, I mentioned we're getting close to Halloween is coming up and so on. You may have heard there's a lot of things going on right now with fear clowns and clown all sorts of clown excitement. Let me read this to you. It's from the Lake County Sheriff's Office. They're taking proactive measures. They're going to deal with anyone acting disorderly while wearing costumes, specifically though clown costumes or dressed as clowns. They're trying to take aim at this strange trend that has swept not only Illinois but also the nation in general in recent days. There's been an increase in reports across the nation of offenders wearing creepy clown costumes while harassing or threatening members of the community. I've seen reports through our schools as well as just local businesses and so on. The Lake County Sheriff's Office is going to aggressively investigate any of these claims, and anyone who dresses in a costume, wears a mask, disguises themselves, or anything else while making threats or acting disorderly towards others. This is a statement that was released by the sheriff's office just this last Wednesday. And they also, too, have the Lake County Sheriff's Office school safety team that has been communicating with all of the schools in the jurisdiction, providing safety reminders for students and staff. Sheriff's deputies are conducting extra patrols at all the schools right now. And they're saying what we've heard for a long time. They're saying, if you see something, say something. Of course, it's tough. We're getting in the region of Halloween, so you're going to see a, I think that's probably, start to be the theme for Halloween is going to be clowns, evil clowns coming back up. So maybe, you know, break out the old Insane Clown Posse, get some music going on for that. I don't know. We'll have to figure out something for that. Of course, we've got Yom Kippur is also coming up. Don't forget Tuesday and Wednesday. So if you celebrate, don't forget to prepare for that. If you, however you choose to honor the Days of Atonement. And, man, we are getting so close to the end of the show. I'm going to just throw out, you know, I'm going to probably write this up, but I will share just really quickly with you. It's not that tough. You can create a Twitter bot yourself. I alluded to this earlier that I created a Twitter bot that takes all of Donald Trump's tweets from past years and takes random ones from this day in some past year and blast that out for you. I've got it set right now to go about every 15 to 30 minutes or so. I don't know. That might be too much. Maybe that's too much, Donald, even for us, even for Donald lovers. But if you're curious to see the results of the Twitter bot, you can go and follow Today's Trump, at Today's Trump. It's This Day in Trump is the name of the Twitter bot, but it's Today's Trump, and then there's no commentary added to it. It's literally just the year that it came out and his tweet from this day in Trump history, so we can see how we got there. I'm going to try to remember to get the code up on Tech Talk, or I'll definitely put it up in my blog, 43folderstech.net. You can take a look at it there and see how it was done. The difficult parts of it really are just understanding how, and I did this all through Google Sheets, I should say too. So I created a Google Sheets, which is a Google Drive free spreadsheet application, has the ability to create macros and also to use JavaScript to create true programming and applications. I use the JavaScript backend to pull those random tweets. And then the difficult part is just creating a service that will fetch the information you need, that will post the information that you want to tweet, that will use the authorization that's built into the Twitter back end in order to send a tweet out as a specific Twitter account. You have to be careful not to step on the Twitter terms and services, of course, and all that. But if you're able to do that, and once I get that that code up on the site for you, you can create a Twitter bot feed of pretty much anything you might want to, or that you might not want to. I don't know. But it was a fun thing to put together, and I'll, like I said, I'll try to share more information with you on that later. I know typically we try to get in some good cool sites of the week and so on. I think what I may do though is perhaps put this to the side for now. I'll try to get us some good free apps for next week and fun stuff like that, because we are coming right to the end of the show. This has been Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LP FM at Round Lake Heights, Illinois. I don't believe that we're going to have a Science for the Win coming up, but we may have a recorded option for that, so don't turn away. Even if you'd missed one of the shows that he's had before, anything by Robbie Rigel is fantastic and informative and great to listen to. So you'll want to stay tuned in for that. I am going to leave us with a little podcast only song of the week. I love this. It's kind of mellow, a little mellow song for us this week. It's called Small Crimes by Nilufer Yanya, and the album is called Small Crimes. This is the eponymous Small Crimes song off of that. To close out Tech Talk, October 8th, 2016. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend and a wonderful week as well as we head into fall. And thanks for listening, everyone. Take care. This is Small Crimes by Nilufer Yanya.
I'm a petty thief. What to find I keep. I was supposed to set an example, but I am a vandal. Yeah, the paper's nice, but it's the rush I like. You don't care about the money when you're an adrenaline junkie. What will chain me after they let me loose and realize, or maybe they are small crimes, but some things I just wouldn't do. White lies, but some tales I just can't keep true. And if I gave it up, would I still be a thug? Don't choose to play the bad guy. He's in your bloodline. And I left my heart in a scrap metal yard. You don't get to be a human when you're a hooligan. Words will chain me after they let me loose and realize that maybe they are small crimes, but some things I just wouldn't do. White lies, but some tales I just can't keep to. Small crimes, but some things I just wouldn't do. White lies, but some tales I just can't keep to. I'm a petty thief. What to find I keep. I was supposed to set an example, but I am a vandal.